Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington. And today we're going to look back at 2007 and probably take a look forward at 2008. With me today on the program are Will Murphy, the news director at WFIU, who's here in the studio. And joining us by phone are our two frequent flyer guests, John Harmon, the editor of the Columbus Republic, and Max Jones, the editor of the Tribune Star in Terre Haute. Welcome, both of you. All three
Thank
of you.
You.
Welcome,
yeah.
all of you.
Thank you.
All right. Now, I should say that we're pre-recording this program for airing today on the 28th. We're actually doing this about a week in advance. So you can't call in, and we know that there's at least one big news story we'll be talking about a little bit in Terre Haute that probably will have changed between the time we talk and the time that you're hearing this program. So let's get started. And Max, we might as well start with you. Let's talk about some of the big news stories of the year in Terre Haute.
Well, there's been a couple of things that have gotten a lot of people's attention, but nothing comes even close to the ongoing controversy surrounding our municipal election this year. What appeared to be in the primary election, sort of a definitive statement in favor of the incumbent mayor Kevin Burke, all fell apart for him in the general election, and a Republican challenger to the mayor actually defeated him by a little over 100 votes, and it marked the first time in 40 years that Terre Haute had elected a Republican mayor. With all that said, in fact, the election is still undecided because shortly after the election showed Duke Bennett, the Republican, with a slight victory, the incumbent Burke filed a challenge to Bennett's eligibility as a candidate based on the fact that he is employed in a management role by Hamilton Center, which is a regional mental health facility. And the issue surrounded the Federal Hatch Act, which basically prohibits some sorts of political activity by individuals who are actually employed or employed by agencies that get money from the federal government. So it's been sort of a mess, as you can imagine.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And it remains an issue. There were hearings about into the whole issue earlier this week, and actually at the moment we are awaiting a ruling from the Superior Court judge in Vigo County, and you know, that ruling could come to us, we expect it today, but it could come at any moment, actually.
And when
I'll keep you all posted.
All right. And when we're mentioning today, again, we're pre-recording this, so by the time you're listening to this, something probably did happen in that case.
Absolutely.
Although it might even then not be resolved, right? I mean, they might appeal. And Jim Bob doesn't like to give up.
Would expect. Now, you know what I expect, Will? In this case, for sure, if the judge issues a ruling in favor of the incumbent, which would, in effect, reverse the outcome of the election, you would certainly expect the Republican Party and the Republican mayor-elect to challenge it, to appeal the judge's ruling. I don't think it's quite as clear on the other side. You know, if Mayor Burke loses in the local court level, there's always a possibility he could appeal, but I don't think that's as clear at this point of whether or not he will challenge it further if he loses at this stage.
Okay, so municipal election in Terre Haute, big story. How about in Columbus, John? What were some of the big stories over there?
Well, it wasn't the municipal election. our three-term – I think we were out of here before the polls closed, actually. No, we have a very popular three-term mayor who's set the standard for pluralities in past elections. He was elected – easily this time for his fourth term, which was a precedent for us. But the big thing, I think, overriding and I'm sure we'll talk about the tax assessments, was our downtown development. There's just a lot of activity going on and a lot of different entities and pieces of it coming together. We talked about it earlier this year on the program. The hotels coming into town,
right.
Our Commons fixture is going to come down here. It's going to close New Year's Eve. That's the last day for it. There's a parking deck going up. It's just really an exciting time for downtown. Well, for Columbus in total, but for the entire community.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it sounds like business and downtown. We're sort of two for two here, Will. In Bloomington, I think the city election and downtown are two of the issues we'd probably talk about a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Development is a big thing.
Yeah. So with the city election here, though, we're sort of we've had a Democratic mayor for some 42 years, I think, 43 years, something along those lines.
Since Tommy Ellison.
Yes. Well, no, since Frank McCloskey.
Right,
so sorry
about that.
Long time. And we still have a Democratic mayor. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the kind of upheaval that you had in Terre Haute, Max. So, but the municipal election here, and Will, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that the city government, if possible, took a little bit of a turn to the left. And I wasn't sure that'd be possible. But.
I don't know if it's to the left or not. I mean, Mayor Cruzan made a joke, as he often does, in his presentation to council last week about getting an email from Brad Whistler, who, mm-hmm. Everywhere he goes, he's the quorum for the Republican caucus on council.
Yeah.
So whether or not it's more liberal or not, I don't know. But I sure get the impression there's less sort of oversight.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that makes me a little anxious.
Well, when I say that, I mean basically a couple of people who were moderate, I would consider the moderate Democrats. Well, Mike Dekoff in particular has left the council. He's now he's been named the police chief under the mayor, Mayor Mark Cruzan, and David Sabah, who was one of two Republicans on the council, was the Republican who ran against Cruzan and was beaten pretty soundly in the election. So instead of a 7-2 Democrat majority, it's an 8-1 Democrat majority now. So, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think 7-2, 8-1, it doesn't really matter. The direction of the city of Bloomington has been pretty clearly pathed out for the last decade or so, and people seem to be very happy with the direction it's going.
Can you give a sense of how Mike Satterfield will sit in this council?
Mike Satterfield is replacing Mike Dekoff on the council, and he's Mike Dekoff's neighbor. And my only information about Satterfield really is, I shouldn't admit this, but really it comes through Dekoff, who believes that he'll be a very strong council member. And I think those two guys are probably a little bit closer than maybe Satterfield would be with some of the other folks who are a little bit more on the green end of things. So.
The other thing you can say about council is that it's going to become more voluble with the absence of Mike Dekoff. He was famous for – he was as talkative as Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
So I think we'll hear a lot more. If it's possible, city council meetings will become even longer.
That could be. That's right. All right. So let's talk about education a little bit. Any education issues in Columbus or Terre Haute that you want to talk about?
Big time in Columbus. We have a new middle school opened up this year, and that was really a big community story going back several years when we attempted a major bond to repair several schools, switch middle schools' alignments, and which got shot down in a remonstrance. But Central Middle School opened up, and it's state-of-the-art. It's right downtown, and it's coupled with that, we've started the magnet school approach, and also are the only community that's linking that with into the middle school, which ties in with Central's opening, and we're realigning a couple of schools to actually making a third high school, a third building anyway, for it's called a tech school,
new tech high school.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's been so much, it's almost a replication of the array of programs coming down from the state level that you kind of, from from toll roads to license branches and what time it is. And on top of that, with that project completed, there were major renovations needed at North, which needs major infrastructure repairs because it's 40 years old, and also East needs a lot of repairs. That's $60 million per school. Another one, not to dominate here, but there are other county school corporation, Flat Rock, Haw Creek, and this kind of ties into the plan. They had a plan to close the school and streamline the existing middle school and high school. It went through a remonstrance. Well, there was plenty of discussion on that. Closing the school was very controversial. They agreed to do that, and then there was a remonstrance on the $18 million program, and that was the remonstrance was defeated. So then it was clear sailing, but it got rejected on the State Board of Tax Commissioners field examiner hearing, who didn't like the some parts of the proposal and was going to recommend a rejection of it. So it was an interesting, even though it was approved in an arduous process to remonstrance projects locally, it was still it was thumbs down on the state level. Now, that doesn't mean it's dead, but there'll be further work has to be done on it.
I think we'll get to – I think there's some things to talk about with that, the remonstrance process and the referendum process that the governor has recommended for public school projects, but we'll get to that in a little bit later in the program. Max, how about you?
Well, the main news out of the education front here in Terre Haute this year has really been in the higher education area. Earlier this year, really in the first half of the year, the current ISU president announced that he would be stepping down from that role at the end of next year, end of 2000, or during the middle of 2008, once his contract expires. That was, that's always a big deal when you have a university that's going to change leadership. ISU has been struggling the last few years to keep its enrollment where it needs to be. There's been some major realignment of programs and proposals to realign its programs and try to refocus its purpose as a state university. So amid all of that, the university now is in the process of looking for a new president. So that'll also be a big story for next year, but certainly was a big story on the education front this year with the decision of President Lloyd Benjamin to step down at the end of his contract. And secondly, I would say it's kind of an interesting story from our perspective was that St. Mary of the Woods College, which is a Catholic women's university here in Vigo County, they chose the first male president in their history. So that was very interesting. The gentleman's name is David Bears, and he seems like a grand guy. He's got some great vision, shows great leadership skills, and the community seems real excited about him being here. And we're anxious to see how that works. But it certainly was quite a departure of tradition to have a traditional women's school actually choose a male as their president for the first time in their long history.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot was going on the higher education level. In Bloomington, I think Will and I would agree that higher education had huge stories this year, but so did public education. Will, why don't you talk a little bit about higher education, and I'll fill in with the public education.
Well, obviously the story is President McGraw-Bee taking over for President Herbert. Herbert Green stepped down a little ahead of schedule with his contract, and Michael McGraw-Bee taking over and I think it's a bit of an understatement to say he's a guy who doesn't let grass grow under his feet. I mean, he was named in March, one of two finalists. And that discussion, of course, generated a lot of discussion. There was another in-house candidate from the Indianapolis campus, and who they picked to succeed President Herbert, I think, alienated a lot of folks and made a lot of friends, no matter which decision they went with. So, and McGraw-Bee takes over in July, and since then, it's kind of amazing to look at the things that have happened just in that short period of time. I mean, there's the trip to China that just got completed, China and Australia. There's the $69 million that was given just the other day to the music school and the law school from Lilly Foundation. There was the announcement of, I think it's $113 million in construction projects for reconfiguring the dormitories. And I know that President Mograbi, one of his big things is sort of redefining the face of the campus and radically increasing both research and classroom space. So I think this is just sort of the beginning of what he's hoping to do there.
Well, I think he named a whole lot of people to key positions at the university. And I think I'm not going to go through every one of them, but I would mention Karen Hansen, who's the new provost at IU Bloomington, and she's been on the program, and I think she has her hands full with her new position.
Do we need to say, just in the interests of transparency, that your wife works for the IU News Service office and my wife works for Mograbi's office?
I don't think we have to say that.
Okay.
but it's okay if you did.
All right.
Yeah. Public school front, John, Bloomington is much like Columbus. I think actually Bloomington is looking to Columbus for leadership in terms of sort of restructuring the school corporation. And Bloomington is involved – Monroe County is involved in the high school level. A new technology high school is going to open up here in the fall. And that was decided I think about in May or June. It was decided early in the summer. And there have been lots of discussions about where it's going to go. And right now it's scheduled to be in Bloomington High School South. But there are a lot of sort of coy comments being made about how it may not be in South. It may wind up with a freestanding building. So we'll have to wait and see about that. And then the early college program is taking hold here. And it's going to start up in the fall as well, where students can be taking classes for college credit. And it's really aimed toward students that don't normally go to college, 21st century scholars, young people whose family traditions don't necessarily include higher education, and those are the ones that are being targeted for that. So two sort of alternative ways to get through high school, one that would get a jump start on college and one that would have this new technology model, which involves problem solving and problem-based, project-based learning. So it's been a very active year on the education front here in Bloomington and Monroe County.
Do you have a second go around on education?
Sure, go right ahead.
Yeah. I'd be remiss in not mentioning IUPUC got a $2 million funding from the legislature this year, and it was one of the most closely anticipated and closely watched numbers that since I've been around, because it really turned the corner, allowed the campus to turn the corner and open up some new program offerings and degree offerings, especially in like areas of nursing, which is a critical shortage. And it was a major boost to our local campus. And the Learning Center, which is located between Ivy Tech and IUPUC, has really enriched the cooperation and the programming between locally and especially between those two schools. It's just amazing how that's blossomed here in the last few years. Also, just a footnote, which probably might lead into a later discussion, our English is a second language. The number of students enrolled in that, it's climbing towards 1,000, where it was like 200, 300 a few years ago, and now it's up to 860 and heading up. And that has a profound impact on a good portion of the school corporation. And then lastly, we really stepped forward, that we being the community, on the literacy effort. We've had three community book reads where we tackle – this last one is a story about stonecutters down at Bedford, a family. It's an interesting book. But coupled with that is a program called Book Buddies, where community volunteers read with second graders for the whole year. They'll take a half hour and read to kids, with the idea of that really helping them launch their reading abilities and literacy and further matriculation as they go on. We looked at the ISTEP scores, and it was just 1 year, so it really wasn't fair to draw a lot of conclusions, but they did really track the students who were Book Buddies recipients, and 50 to 80% of them passed their I-STEPs, whereas passed, very few would have passed. So it's really an incredible, you know, stepping up to the plate kind of situation where the, and this year we had more volunteers to do it than last year. So it's really exciting thing that's helping, that we know are helping kids improve their educational foundation.
If I could just add another couple of postscripts. Sure. There. Also in Columbus, and I'm sorry, John, if you'd already mentioned this, but IUPUC has a change in leadership as well. And there was another note in Columbus that I'm trying to remember, and it's not really a major story, but it's an interesting sort of harbinger of things to come, and that was the decision by the Columbus School Board to offer Mandarin in their curriculum.
Yeah, that was – well, the first out of the box was they went by the numbers and were going to put German on the shelf. And that this is a community with a very, very strong German heritage, and that idea didn't go so well. But they will offer – put a Mandarin on the plate, and if enough students sign up with it, then they'll go with it and hope to find funding. Of course, that's the major thing. The change of command was like an interim kind of situation. Jay Howard, who has been a professor out there for several years, took over for Nassar Paydar, who moved over to Richmond. Mm-hmm. So Jay's interim, but he's fully engaged and really a full participant and has been for years. He's also a member of the school board, the BCSE school board. So we have an incredible array of talent on our school board here.
You know, a great thing is that we could talk about education for a really long time in all of our communities. I'm sitting here thinking, well, I should mention Ivy Tech because in 2007, Ivy Tech passed the 5,000 mark in terms of enrollment. I mean, the growth at that campus has been staggering, and it probably has in your communities,
same
too.
Same here.
Yeah,
same
but sure has.
You've got to note that Gerald Lampkin, who's been president of Ivy Tech since God made dirt and really instituted the community college system in Indiana stepped down.
Right. Replaced by Tom Snyder.
Yep.
And so, so Ivy Tech is something in all of our communities that we shouldn't neglect. I want to remind our listeners that this is a special pre-recorded edition of Noon Edition. John Harmon from the Republic in Columbus is here with us. Max Jones from the Tribune Star in Terre Haute. Will Murphy from WFIU. And I'm Bob Zaltzberg. We're talking about the big news stories of 2007. And in the second half of our program, we'll turn a little bit to 2008. Before we leave the education area, I just have to mention sports. And I know John and Max are sports fans as well. You know, some of the biggest stories in Bloomington and Monroe County this year involved Indiana University sports. Terry Heppner's death in June, his being replaced by Bill Lynch on an interim basis, a one-year basis, and then the team doing well enough to get a bowl bid and Coach Lynch being named head coach on a four-year contract. That was a huge story here. And it's one of those stories that could be turned into a movie and probably will at some point. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the coin, we have the IU basketball program, which is doing very, very well on the court, but not so well off of it with Coach Kelvin Sampson. And, we're still – this news story may break between the time we record this program and the time that we air it too, but we're still waiting for the NCAA to weigh in on some violations and some allegations made about improper phone calls, which is something that Coach Sampson had been found guilty of doing before. So the NCAA may be some sanctions against IU. We're just waiting to see about that. So it's kind of put a little bit of a shadow over this. Yeah.
I don't think there's much to add.
Will don't want to add anything to that.
I think I'll just stop.
Okay.
A couple of names that the listeners, at least the veteran listeners, would be familiar with. Mike Phipps from Columbus went into the College Hall of Fame this past year, and Ray Eddy, who's earlier generation, several earlier generation. He went into the Purdue Hall of Fame. he was a top player and coach. I just have to plug one of the most exciting games I've ever been to, the Columbus East Girls.
I read about that.
It was just semifinals against Center Grove. Thrilling, exciting game, and they went on to lose against South Bend, Washington in the finals. But it was just a fantastic experience for the team and the school and the community. We also had people might be familiar with Maria Stack. She made the state basketball Hall of Fame, so it was a big year. And NASCAR fans will Tony Stewart, a local resident who's taken up He has some significant property in the community, shall we say, and on the Brickyard for the second time.
Yeah,
we were thinking of doing a parade and everything for him, but I don't think Tony's into that kind of stuff. He's just into winning races.
Any Hall of Famers over there in Terre Haute, Max?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have some interesting characters on the sports scene here, but I need to mention before I get into that is that while the IU football fans over the years have wondered whether or not the football program would ever get to another bowl game before this year, over here in Terre Haute, the question is ISU's football team ever going to win another game?
Oh, nice. You
may or may not know that the football program has really been struggling in recent years. I believe they've won one game in the last four seasons. And what happened this year was the decision was made to remove the current coach in the middle. His name was Lou West, and he was removed from his head coaching position in the middle of the season. That certainly didn't have any direct impact on the success or failure of the season because the ISU didn't win any games. But what they did was they went out and they've now hired a former Indiana State University player, a player who was here and during a period when the ISU football program was very successful. His name is Trent Miles, and he is already hard at work trying to see if he can take a shot at rebuilding a program that has had some success in the past, but certainly in the more recent past. It has really been struggling. It's really been a problem, and there's even been questions about whether or not the football program should continue.
Mm-hmm. And he's coming from Washington, right?
Pardon me?
He's coming from Washington,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. But on a more upbeat front, the community had just a tremendous event here a few weeks ago when they announced they were going to create an Olympic monument at the site of a former high school, one of the old high schools, Terre Haute Garfield, which consolidated some 35 years ago or so. And the three gentlemen who are going to be honored are Terry Dischinger, who played at Purdue,
yeah.
and was a very prominent.
Clyde Lavellet, maybe.
Clyde Lavellet is one, a professional basketball player, and the third was Greg Bell, who was a gold medal Olympian.
Oh, yes.
That's great.
Track star here. So all three of those gentlemen won gold medals in the Olympics, in addition to having stellar individual careers. And this year they announced the creation of this Olympic Park to honor these gold medalists. And we had a very upbeat ceremony here, and the gentlemen seemed to truly appreciate what the community had done for them, and we're all proud of them. And even though they don't live around here anymore, they seem real pleased to come back and be part of the event.
Well, since we're bragging on our own, I think it's worth noting that AT Anthony Thompson drawn into the Hall of Fame,
right,
and recognized by his colleagues and successors just recently.
And he's from Terre Haute.
He is from Terre Haute. So we have a twofer there, and we just announced in our paper. I think it was announced just last week that Jerry Yeagley is going into the Hall of Fame for college soccer coaches as
That's certainly deserved.
And, you know, John Mellencamp is not an athlete, although there is a John Mellencamp on the IU soccer team. It's his nephew. But he's going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, too. So
one story that's not happening and you don't see, and I think people are suffering in silence, is this deal between the cable and the Big Ten Network.
Mm-hmm.
After I'm slightly interested in Big Ten basketball. And
you like those Hawkeyes, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm across the board. Any team, and I'll watch Penn State and Northwestern. But I mean, they're gone. It's just amazing that this has come to this point. And I, as a fan, I'm really upset about it. I just have to go back to the radio, which is what I did 30 or 40 years ago. But
yeah, don't get me started on this Big Ten Network thing. It's greed on both sides.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we've hit halftime, which is a good thing to say about sports. We're doing a show today about 2007 and some of the big stories were sports stories, and we're going to get back to the news, some things about maybe some crime news, some state news, some national news after we take a break. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage, using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. The holiday season is upon us, and, well, what do you get for the Prairie Home Companion lover on your list? Garrison Keillor and company are coming to the IU Auditorium in Bloomington on February 16th for a live national broadcast. Premium seating with access to post-show VIP reception still available. More information available at wfiu.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg from the Herald Times, along with Will Murphy from WFIU, John Harmon. He's got his new Krusty the Clown pin, and I'm sorry, we can't control him. Will Murphy is here, and John Harmon is here from the Republican Columbus, and Max Jones is here. They're both on the phone from their respective communities. Max Jones from the Tribune Star in Terre Haute. We are pre-recording the program, which means you can't phone us with questions or comments, including comments about Krusty's comments. So
I'll be quiet now. I'm sorry.
All right. Max, John, let's take a quick spin around the unhappy topic of crime. You know, we always cover these bad stories, and there's always seems to be a story or two a year that people will remember. I guess we can go first. I think Will and I were talking before about the case of Wade Steffi. Will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that certainly was a dominant story both here and at Purdue. And I really don't know what to say aside from the fact that it's one of those stories that really just rivets a community's attention. And there's some good, I guess, that comes out of it, that Purdue looks at its safety protocols, that there is a scholarship set up in his memory, but just a tragic series of events that affected two very close-knit communities.
Yeah, I think that's probably enough. Just want to acknowledge some of these things. Max, anything in Terre Haute? Or did you have a good year?
Well, you've got the Javens thing. That's not a crime thing, but it's a similar kind of story.
The Scott Javens case was very perplexing to the community over a long period of time. A 20-year-old man who disappeared back in the spring of 2002, and virtually without a trace. There had never been any evidence whatsoever that gave investigators any clue as to what may have happened. And then, to a series of coincidences, this fall, his vehicle was found in the Wabash River near one of our city parks. And after the car was recovered, there were human remains in the car. It turned out to be Scott Javens in the car. And just this week, the coroner and the police released the results of their investigation, and they came to the conclusion that it was an accidental death, that
that the young man was intoxicated and drove into the park and put his car into fifth gear, probably thinking that it would not roll, and then he fell asleep. And in fact, the car did roll and rolled into the river, and he drowned as a result of that. So, but, you know, 5.5 years went by, and there was never any clue, and certainly at times foul play was suspected. At this point, there has never been any evidence of that. But it has been one of the stranger cases, I think, that I've ever encountered, and the community was sort of in the middle of this gut-wrenching thing for so long, and there may be a sense of relief now that people finally know what may have happened.
Yeah, those cases are very sad. John?
Well, we had, you might be familiar, you are familiar with the quadruple murder down in Jackson County.
Yeah, sure.
And here, the Robert Bassett, he was brought back to trial for conspiracy because when he was in prison or in jail, he tried to have the prosecutor, deputy prosecutor, murdered. So he was sent another 80 years was added on to him, and I don't think that he was convicted once, and then that was overturned, and then convicted again at the tune of, I don't know, $140,000, and then this was a third case, so we won't be seeing him for a while. But probably the piece that every county faces, and we faced this 10 years ago, and are facing it again, or is a jail addition of $8.5 million addition to the jail, and we just had a brand new jail 10 years ago. So it's really kind of pessimistic in a way, despite a lot of programming in our county, work release, rehab programs, largely, I suppose, with the meth outbreak in the last 5-6 years, the jails are just bulging, and that in itself doesn't seem to deter people from committing crimes to get into crowded jail cells. So
yeah, right.
We have to build $8.5 million additions where it could be, goodness knows, spent in a lot of other places. We had a couple big fires, too, Hoosier Parts, and then the Seasons Lodge over there in Brown County.
Oh, yeah.
Was incredible.
Yeah.
Was the Brand fire, was that last year or the year before?
That was right about this time,
okay.
The year before, right around during the holidays, and then the investigation and went on during last spring and middle of the year.
Okay. Well, I might mention just as a last note on this crime issue or security issue. The criminal justice issue. Monroe County, of course, is also has been wrestling for a long time with an overcrowded jail. And in 2007, there were a couple of different proposals brought forward about how to create more space to house offenders and also to solve our juvenile justice problem with a juvenile justice center. So those will be big. That's going to be a big issue for 2008. Although it's been on the books for about. On the books. It's been discussed for about 20 years already, so we'll see what happens.
I have to say that Columbus was at least got a mention in one of the weirdest stories of the year to me. It's not a crime story. It is because the release came from the U.S. attorney this week. But that guy who goes on his mail route in Plainfield or wherever it was, he makes one delivery. He locks up his truck. He smears his own blood on his mail truck. Gets in a kayak, goes down the White River to Columbus.
Yeah, that was in Greenfield.
Greenfield, that's
it. He was from Greenfield, but he ended up in a used
laundromat.
Car lot in the south. I said, what is this all
about? Yeah.
The mail must go through, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ranks up there on the bizarro meter.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, let's for a few minutes, set our sights a little bit more on 2008. And we can do this, but I want to move to sort of some state stories, and not so much what the legislature did, but what the governor did in the last year with his proposal for property tax reform, and then the commission headed up by Randall Shepard, the Chief Justice, and Joe Kernan, the former governor, on reorganizing state government. So let's start with property tax reform. What parts of that proposal, John? Let's start with you. Do you think have any chance at all? You know, what's your take on it?
On like which part? What?
Well, his proposal, which includes things like going to a 7% sales tax, capping the assessed valuation for property tax, so it would reduce the state's reliance on property tax.
Well, yeah. We've done a series. I wasn't sure whether you're talking the streamlining or the
original proposal. On the tax reform.
But we've been doing a series of actually an unending series on each element of that, going from like the homestead exemption. We got a call. Right, I got a call from a woman who had her property and had two houses. She moved from one to the other when her husband died. And then she went to file for her homestead, and she couldn't have – you can't. It's only on one property, but she couldn't file it that year because she missed the deadline. Her situation changed in April, and then she wouldn't be eligible for the next year. I mean, and so that's a substantial, almost double what she would pay in her. So there's details like that, and the – I guess we'll need a we would have a business plan before we would tackle what is the actual impact of an increase in sales tax. Who is that really going to affect? What products is it going to affect? And will it end up more benefiting? Will it solve the problem in the long run? And I've heard the same debates, the same arguments over and over, but not much movement as far as you know, the sales tax. I don't think the overall assessment issue was basically equalizing and then compounding that with the trending piece. That was something that needed to be done, just like a lot of these things in this local government, streamlining local government, they're obvious. One thing, volunteer fire departments are just not going to make it in the future. They might make it next year, but in the future, it's not going to happen. So there's just so many elements in it, but it's fantastic that we're tackling it, and there's pain, and we knew that from whenever the suit was filed in Lake County that this was going to the chickens were going to come home to roost, and they're here. But at least we're wading through it, and we're maybe halfway there.
Well, one point I said before, I'd get back to the issue of remonstrances and referendums, and one part of this of the governor's plan would call for essentially a referendum on any significant capital project that government's going to undertake. And it seems to me, and I've said this in editorials, that that's going to essentially stop any school improvement building.
Right. So I worked at Richmond and, you know, with Ohio next door. You're right. That's it.
Yeah. Max, how about your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'll take a little different approach to the question, and perhaps it's more of a political approach. I think the largest questions for me going into this year, and certainly starting on January the 8th when the General Assembly convenes, is whether or not there's that body is going to have the will to take any major reforms under consideration and actually make movement on it this year. You know, they're going into a short session. They're going into a highly politicized situation with some heavily politicized issues. We've got a gubernatorial election hovering nearby. And perhaps I'm a little too cynical about the whole process. But at this point, you know, I'm going to have to see the action to believe it. I am not in the least bit optimistic that any major progress will be made in the environment and the climate that exists in Indianapolis once you get into a short session leading into a primary, leading into a gubernatorial election. It's going to be a very curious thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess my question about that would be, are the citizens of Indiana going to demand some sort of action? Or are the citizens going to be willing to sort of just watch the status quo continue?
Well, and you know, I guess we'll kind of see whether or not there's some sort of groundswell. You know, at this point, there very well could be, but you wonder in a short session whether or not they can generate the kind of momentum to force a change on the legislature. I almost see the brinksmanship that we've often seen in the past occur in the General Assembly taking effect, and to the point that some of the leadership is going to say, hey, we're just going to take our chances that the public's going to be on our side.
Well, what about the reorganization of state government and county government? What do you think?
It's hard to predict. I think there's probably a lot of popular support for streamlining government. I mean, the proposals that are outlined by the Kernan Shepherd Commission suggest, for example, basically cutting a number of elected officials in half. I think there's probably general popular support, but there's also a strong lobby on behalf of township assessors in particular and county governments. So I think there'll be a lot of opposition to protect turf. It maybe has a somewhat enhanced chance of success, at least certain parts of it, because of the people who headed that commission, two people who are, I think, respected for their moderation, former Governor Kernan and Chief Justice Shepherd. So that may help the chances for some of it. The other problem is that in Marion County, for example, I can see big support for changing county government. And given a few stories that I won't refer to here in Monroe County, I could see a big support for changing how county government officials are selected. But there are places like Lake County. Good luck. You know, that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me. I think there are a lot of good ideas in both the governor's proposal and the Kernan Shepherd Commission proposal. But as Max said, you know, will there be the political will to do anything? One thing I want to throw out to all three of you is this sort of insistence on trying to make a constitutional amendment out of both of these things. I mean, the governor wants it to be a constitutional amendment that would change the assessed valuation that would cap it. And there's a constitutional amendment in the reorganization plan as well. What do you guys think about that? Any thoughts?
It's just crazy. I mean, I'd like a constitutional amendment that guarantees a 10% raise every year and a constitutional amendment that gives me a daily allotment of chocolate. I just think it's crazy that people think, God, I want this to happen. Let's put it in the Constitution. It's just – I think it's just nuts.
Yeah. Well, I think some of it is mandatory that when you're getting into restructuring pieces of and it's only because that's the way it's always been and it's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to do it, that's fine. And part of that, if there's a cap, that's fine. The only problem is that it adds, what, is it like 3 years to the process?
I think it does, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, this stuff. I mean, this is Indiana. I mean, I used to hear people just complain all the time about the township system. Now somebody's actually stepping forward and doing. But it's like school issues. There's teacher in every neighborhood. And it's very township trustees, township offices, the firehouses are the little city halls of in each township. And that's the – at least that's the way it's been traditionally. That might be changing. And that will be very difficult to change. But it's really exciting that they're – I know just from seeing in with volunteer fire departments, the upgraded standards, the upgraded expectations, the people who do not have the time for long-term volunteer commitments, that's going to change and we'll have countywide fire departments. It's going to have to happen if people want their houses saved. And the same things with state government. Some of the assessment, township trustees being the assessors, that's just not going to work. And a lot of it's outsourced anyway.
Yeah. All right, we have about 4 minutes to go, which means about a minute per person. And so I want to talk about the governor's race next year, the president's race next year, and then some predictions for 2008. So, John, why don't you go first? Who? Let's talk about the governor's race first. Who do you think will be the nominees, and who do you think is going to win?
I don't know. One year we had a lot of issues here in Columbus, and that were hot issues, hot button issues, and the mayor. Gambled and he went through without any opposition. So I've never seen
a governor have more balls in the air and more controversial things and potential to tee people off, it's going to be. But I also remember when he ran for office, it was like it was a steamroller. He was running a year before he started. I don't see any other candidate doing that. You know, Thompson is a candidate, but it's nothing for a gubernatorial race. It's getting started real late.
Yeah. All right, Max.
Well, I think in the gubernatorial race, Mitch Daniels is going to have a very difficult time winning re-election, no matter who he's running against. I just think, based on what we saw this year and the upheaval during municipal elections, and I happen to think he's done a pretty good job on many fronts. You can disagree with some of his approaches to things, and certainly I would, but I really think it's going to be difficult. I will not at all be surprised if we see Governor Daniels lose his job this year.
Will?
I would share that assessment. I think if I had to predict, and since I won't be here next year, I don't have to worry about being held accountable for this, but my bet would be Jill Long Thompson wins the primary, and depending upon what happens in the presidential election, probably wins the governor's office. I know a lot of it would really energize the fan base of Hillary Clinton folks if she were leading the ticket, and if Evan Bayh run that ticket, that would bring folks out. So I think a lot of it is influenced by what happens at the presidential level. But I think Jill Long Thompson is my pick for governor.
All right. Well, I think Mitch Daniels is a good enough politician that he's going to survive. But let's move on to the presidential race.
He's very good.
Yeah. All right, John, in 30 seconds or less.
In the presidential race, I predict another record year for Cummins.
All right.
I just have to mention they've had a fantastic year.
There you go.
You know, and they've had two stock splits, a new plant online, and that's my vote for president.
Good use of your time. Max?
I would say it's going to be Clinton versus Romney, with Clinton winning a slight victory.
Wow. Will?
It's a historic election, whether it's Obama or Clinton on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, it's fun to watch Republicans instead of Democrats being kind of goofy. And so who knows what's going to come out of that pile. But, yeah, it's anybody's guess on the Republican side. I mean, Huckabee is doing so well in Iowa right now. Who knows what's going to happen? That's a toss-up.
All right. I'm skipping that one, too.
I stick with what my prediction was at the election show we did, so people can look in the archives.
Okay, good.
Check it on their iPod.
Yeah. Actually, I think I said Obama, and I think I'm still sort of thinking Barack Obama is going to get the nomination, and if he gets a nomination, I think he'll win. We only have 30 seconds to go, so, you know, any one-word predictions for next year? John?
We need more volunteers. Everybody does.
All right. Max?
Sunny and warmer.
Sunny and warmer. Will?
Today, as we're doing this, they're having the homeless memorial at the First United Methodist Church. And poverty, as your paper outlined this year, a continuing story.
All right. And I'm not going to predict anything, but I do want to acknowledge that Noon Edition lost a couple of fine folks last year. Mike Pashkash's mother, our engineer, she died in 2007. And so did Mary Catherine Carmichael's mother. That's why Mary Catherine hasn't been with us the last few weeks. So I want to thank Max Jones and John Harmon and Will Murphy for being here with us today. And I want to wish everybody a happy new year. This is Bob Zaltzberg. It's Noon Edition. Good day.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at acura.com.